Welcome, everyone, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we try to connect the dots and navigate this crazy clown world together, covering the stories the mainstream media will not, and also try to see our way through a lot of the propaganda that we're hearing right now, specifically on this TikTok bill and what unbelievable powers this will give to President Biden and the executive branch of government. This is an absolute Trojan horse. And tonight, I just had a short time ago, managed to sit down and talk with Congressman Thomas Massey here on the show about this, and this is unbelievable. And the things that Congressman Massey just told me are stunning. So you're going to want to pay attention to what we talk about here in just moments.
Plus, scientists say that the COVID inquiry in the UK Parliament is a farce. It is not scientific. It is political. I know you're shocked, but we're going to look at why they're refusing to look at the truth in order to maybe lock you down again. We're going to ask those questions.
Also, we're going to look at why in the world is Oprah out there pushing weight loss drugs with the pharmaceutical company, the biopharmaceutical complex. Callie Means is going to be here to talk all about that and more as Redacted starts right now. Down with Congressman Thomas Massey here in moments. We'll play that interview for you. And just really, really stunning information that we're going to talk about here. So we'll get to that in just moments. We don't want to waste any of your time on this Thursday. So we'll get to that. But first,
we want to tell you about our show sponsor, which is Factor. You know that eating better is easy with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals, because every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. They have over 35 different options to choose from, including whatever your nutritional philosophy is: calorie smart, protein plus, keto. Plus, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled and feeling good while eating at home rather than eating out. They're 2-minute meals. You can fuel up faster with Factor's restaurant quality meals that are ready to eat wherever and whenever you are. Plus, you can sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is actually less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So head on over to factormeals.com/redacted50. Use our code redacted50 to get 50% off. That's redacted50 at factormeals.com/redacted50 and get your 50% off.
Well, the House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly this week to move towards banning TikTok, a move that would eventually ban TikTok in the United States. The argument, they say, is that it's a Chinese spy weapon, of course, designed to spy on Americans. They're very concerned about you being spied on. Okay, something doesn't really add up here. One of the loudest outspoken critics of this bill is Congressman Thomas Massey, who joins us now. Congressman, great to have you here on the show.
Hey, Clayton, thanks for having me on to talk about this.
My pleasure, because something just doesn't add up here. Because I have to say, Congress never moves this quickly on anything, and yet here we are. This bill flies out of committee over unanimously, by the way, then is passed overwhelmingly very, very quickly in the House of Representatives. So what is really going on here?
Oh, well, first of all, you know, they were already forced to move their data servers to the United States. So TikTok is hosted, I believe, by Oracle in the United States. And that's more than we can probably say for the social media companies that are domestic. I mean, they may have some of their data hosted overseas. I don't know where it's at. But TikTok did comply with that. I think it's really about inconvenient facts that are showing up on TikTok, and the government can't control the algorithm. It's not, they can't give one example of where somebody in the United States was spied on and then some action was taken against that person because of something they revealed on TikTok. I think it's more about the message that people, you know, can get from TikTok. It's also Pandora's box here. There are, it gives the president way too much discretion to shut down not just apps, but websites Like, why did they have to list websites in here? And his discretion, he has three ways he can declare one of these apps or websites to be bannable or banned by him. He can either acknowledge that they are domiciled overseas in a foreign adversary country. By the way, he gets to designate who the foreign adversary countries are. But if an application is domiciled in one of these foreign adversary countries, then he can declare it. Or if it's 20% owned by a foreign adversary country, then he can declare it, you know, a bannable. And then there's a third category that's really spooky and concerning to me. And that is if he deems that they are under the control of somebody from a foreign adversary country. So, you know, I've been called Putin's puppet because I won't agree to send money to Ukraine. Obviously, I'm not Putin's puppet. I mean, you know, I live in Kentucky. I've never met Putin. You know, so, but somebody could say later that one of these social media platforms, let's say X, the president could say, well, you know, Elon Musk is really under the control or advisement of a foreign country. And so, and we know that because we see all these messages on X that are not friendly to our foreign policy. So we're going to declare them a foreign, under the control of a foreign adversary. And if that sounds far-fetched, just remember there were 51 U.S. security and intelligence agents who said that Hunter Biden's laptop was had all of the hallmarks of a Russian disinformation campaign.
So right. Nothing sounds far-fetched to us, and our audience is very smart, and I think we feel like we've been lied to repeatedly by our government. I mean, this all comes on the heels of what the House Judiciary Committee and Select Subcommittee just last week issued about this massive government surveillance of Americans' financial data. The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security using this DSAC database to go through financial transactions. So I just find it hilarious that we're concerned about Chinese spying on Americans, and yet we are actively doing that to our own citizens, and we can't point to one instance of China actually spying on America. Like, wouldn't it be great on the floor if there was evidence presented to you guys? Yeah, well, here's the evidence, right? But where's the evidence?
Even in the SCIF, which is where we receive classified information, there was a briefing. And I didn't go to that briefing, but one of my colleagues did, and he pressed them and asked them for one example in a classified setting, and they couldn't give him an example. We have top secret, you know, classification authority in Congress just by virtue of being congressmen. They could tell us anything, and they can't give us one example. So, and by the way, Clayton, I serve on those two committees you mentioned, the Judiciary Committee and the Weaponization Committee. I've been in those hearings. It was actually Jim Jordan and I who discovered that Bank of America was giving financial information to the FBI without a warrant, without any legal process. And, you know, we sent the letter. It was Dan Bishop, myself, and Jim Jordan, who signed that letter, sent it to these banks, and they admitted that they were doing it. And we've had follow-up investigations on that. And, you know, that was another complaint we had about this bill. The problem is you want to protect Americans' privacy and their right to their own data. We have bills for that. And they should apply to all social media platforms. For instance, Warren Davidson, who's now just joined the Weaponization Committee because he has so much knowledge about financial services. He's on the Financial Services Committee. He has a bill called the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act, and we need to pass that because what our government is doing, you know, obviously they're spying on us without a warrant, but if we block that avenue, the big loophole they have is they just go buy the data from these data brokers,
right,
without a warrant, that data that would otherwise require a warrant. Let me give you an example. Every one of us who has a phone, the phone knows we're breaking the speed limit. They know, you know, every phone company can know when everybody is breaking the speed limit. Should they be able to sell that data to the state police, for instance? I don't think so.
We do know that artificial intelligence companies are paying top dollar right now for data. They're trying to get as much data as they can, and they're reaching out to as many companies as they can. They're paying top dollar for this data, and data brokers are making a lot of money right now on Americans' privacy. And so I just find it amazing that the speed and the rapidity with which Congress moved to ban a Chinese app, what they were claiming is a Chinese app, and yet the servers are in the United States. The CIA uses Amazon Web Services actively to spy on Americans. So will there be some sort of legislation in Congress to stop Amazon from being used by, you know, for spying on Americans? I just find it so hypocritical.
Well, there's also a piece of software known as Pegasus that fairly well known that our Israeli government has. Yeah, Israeli software that's state of the art, can do just about anything on your phone, your camera, your microphone. Let me, you know, when I'm on the floor of the House and giving a speech, I have to be 100% certain about what I say. My words could be taken down, or I could be, censured or something, or it just would look bad in a debate. But I want to go one step further here on your show than I felt able to go on the floor of the House. And that is to say, you know, we're in proxy wars, basically, in the Middle East and in Ukraine. And the U.S. government, the State Department, they want to control the propaganda that our citizens see, because citizens call their legislators. They may say, we don't want to fund that war in the Middle East. We don't want to fund that war in Ukraine. And so there's this feedback loop that works in a representative democracy, which is what we have. We have not a pure democracy, but we have representatives who listen to constituents. If you can control what the constituents know about what's going on, for instance, in the war between Israel and Hamas, or in the war between Ukraine and Russia, or even in Yemen, then you can control public sentiment. And I suspect, very strongly, I suspect that our State Department saw this as a threat to the narrative that they want to spoon feed the American people. And because the American people, they do have a say in our government, and they're trying to get in that feedback loop. And they really duped Congress on this. Hmm. They used, you know, the populist threat of China. And I'm not saying that China is not a threat. I said in my speech, we're wearing suits made in China. We're driving cars with chips that were made in China. We're using phones that are made in China. They're buying our farmland. I'm not saying there is no threat from China, but what they're doing is they're not really addressing any of the threat from China. They're using that as the boogeyman to basically shut down one of the apps where they can't control the algorithms.
I thought what your statement was amazing, and I think you hit on something very, very important here. A couple of things I just want to quickly unpack. We're so concerned about China, and yet CBS, 60 Minutes, just a few weeks ago, did a massive report on the massive amount of illegal Chinese immigrants that are pouring across the U.S. southern border into the United States. We've been covering this story extensively here on our show. Military-age men, almost no luggage at all. There's no women with them. There's no children with them. They're coming from China. So Congress moved very quickly to worry about a social media app, but is not doing anything about the southern border on this very issue of China pouring across our southern border. I just find this, again, another piece of the hypocritical puzzle here. But something you said at the very beginning about the speech, they're concerned about the content on the app. And I think that, to me, is what I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you about that. That, to me, seems the most important piece of this puzzle here, that they don't like what's being posted on TikTok about any of these proxy wars that the American government is trying to back and fund. And we covered this a little bit last night on the show. The number of hashtag Free Palestine posts on TikTok is monumentally larger than the Stand With Israel posts. And of course, you've had the Anti-Defamation League coming out, blasting TikTok, wanting to get it removed, claiming it's one of the greatest threats right now. So that, to me, stood out. Do you think that it's really we could point to the Israel connection here as a major piece of this?
Well, Clayton, as you know, I'm joining you from the GOP retreat here in West Virginia at the Greenbrier. And our lunchtime speaker is the ambassador from Israel. So, every Republican member of the Congress is going to hear an hour-long speech from the ambassador from Israel here at, at this retreat. And that's our guest speaker. So that's another way to control the narrative. Is we're not going to have a Palestinian guest speaker or Lebanese guest speaker, and they don't want it on TikTok. Now, let me say, it could be true that China is biasing the algorithms on TikTok. I'm not saying it's a bastion of free speech. I don't think that there are any social media platforms that are free of bias. The one that comes the closest is X, and that's why I use X, because I know that I'm able to get my message out there unfiltered, and I feel like it's not being tamped down. But it could be true that China lets or even amplifies things that are critical of our government on TikTok. But here's the thing, we have a right to foreign propaganda. This is, I know that sounds bizarre, but the alternative is much worse. If you let, or the US government let you only hear things that are convenient for the US government. And when I say the US government, I don't mean the elected US government, I mean the State Department. And my friend Dan Bishop, who's an attorney, I yielded him 4 minutes in the debate yesterday because he was able to point this out. There's Supreme Court decisions that say we have the right to access information from overseas.
Right, we already have that. We already have that ability, right? And of course, we know the abuse that that's been leading to with FISA warrants within the FBI, of course, and accessing who falls under this category. And so, to kind of get you out of here, Congressman, I know you've got a busy day. The piece of this, the foreign adversary part of this, seems to me the most troublesome, right? It's the fluidity with which the president could add anyone they want to this list. What becomes a foreign adversary? So for those critics who are saying this is not a big deal, this is specifically North Korea and China, nothing to see here, or Iran, nothing to worry about here. But what if you add in Saudi Arabia? What if you start adding in all sorts of different countries and you have no say in it, right?
Right. Or Malou, who's the, I think is he's in Argentina, right?
Right.
Maybe you add them as a foreign adversary. There are and here's the thing. It doesn't, like I said at the beginning of this interview, the way the president can categorize an application or a website as being under control of foreign adversaries, either they're 20% owned by a foreign adversary country, they are domiciled in a foreign adversary country, or he thinks at his discretion. There's no court, there will be no court ruling. It will be one person, the president of the United States, who thinks that that app is under control of a foreign adversary country, which is a list, by the way, that he gets to make up. There's no Article III judge or jury that's going to say, yeah, we agree with the president on that. He's just gets to make that decision unilaterally. I don't, given the abuse of the FISA program where they've been spying on Americans, giving the false narrative about the Hunter Biden laptop that was supported by our government, giving the censorship that we've seen in our Weaponization Committee and our Judiciary Committee of social media platforms and of specific users on social media platforms by the White House. I mean, Joe Biden's people had a portal into Facebook and into Twitter where they could give names of people that they wanted censored, and they got censored or blacklisted or deboosted or shadow banned. I was one of those congressmen that got censored before X was, Twitter was purchased and renamed X by Elon. Given what we've seen, the abuse of all of the authority that the president has or claims he has, why in the world would we give him more authority? Like, why would Republicans give Joe Biden that authority? He's here for at least another year. And why would Democrats give it to Donald Trump? The reality is, you're not, the State Department believes that they can control that authority regardless of who the president is, and then they will be able to use this to ban inconvenient information that the American people receive that's counter to the narrative that they're trying to push in all of their overseas operations.
And maybe you'll get some clearer answers today during your lunchtime speaker.
Yes.
Maybe that.
But listen, here to that point, it's all propaganda. Obviously, the ambassador of Israel, when he addresses us today, he's going to try to, I mean, man, what a powerful position to be the keynote speaker at the GOP retreat. We've got all these other things going on, right? We've got illegal immigration at the border. We've got inflation. We just finished half of an omnibus, and we're about to do the second half of the omnibus that's going to spend tens of billions of dollars more than Nancy Pelosi spent. And that's our keynote speaker. I think we need to get our priorities, you know, our keynote speaker is not dealing with any of that, but we need to get our priorities straight here in the GOP and in Congress in general. Let the American people install the software they want. Let them go to the websites they want. Don't give one person the authority to ban websites or to keep American people from seeing what they want to see or interacting. I mean, TikTok's mostly used by Americans to interact with Americans, right?
Right.
Like, I think the government is just big mad that they can't control the algorithms there. And I mean, so that's why it happened. And like you said, it happened at a speed we don't usually see here in Congress. This bill didn't exist a week ago. It just came into existence. Boom. It moved at the speed of light through the Committee of Jurisdiction, Energy and Commerce. It was reported out unanimously. It didn't get changed at all. One reasonable change to this would be to put a sunset provision in it. Okay,
right.
Maybe Thomas Massie isn't right, or maybe they're not right. You know, maybe this is going to get abused, maybe it's not going to get abused, but let's have it automatically expire in 2 or 3 years in case it is abused. Then we have a chance to fix it. But I think that automatic expiration would also keep them honest. If they know they abuse this, then we'll let it expire. That would be a good thing. Sunset provisions are very wise because it's hard to get anything done in Congress. And once something, the ball starts rolling, it's almost impossible to stop the ball from rolling. So putting a provision in there that this expires, that would have been really a good show of faith that they don't intend to abuse this for the rest of human history.
I'll get you out of here on this, Congressman. Where does this go in the Senate?
Well, they may, you know, the Senate may do their own version of it. I do think the fact that we rallied 65 people to vote against this is somewhat of a success. You know, in the Committee of Jurisdiction, which was Energy and Commerce, there was no dissension. And yesterday, they expected to have a debate with nobody opposed. I had to use a parliamentary procedure that's not frequently used, that if you discover that the Republican side and the Democrat side are both in favor of a bill, a third person can walk up to the floor and claim time in opposition. So they thought they were going to have 40 minutes to preen and virtue signal. And I took 20 of their 40 minutes and gave them inconvenient facts and rebutted virtually everything they had. And I think we tripled the number of Republicans who voted against this. We were probably at 5 and we went to 15 because of that debate. And we had 50 Democrats. The reason I'm telling you all this is we definitely put a scratch on their car. And I don't know if they can sell this car in the Senate now. There's some people who were arguing, oh, we better pass the House bill because the Senate will be even worse. And that, you know, it could end up that this is going to be worse. I don't know.
Well, seems like the state of Kentucky right now is the bulwark against this craziness. So thank you for what you're doing, Congressman, because our audience loves you. We are big fans of you here on Redacted. So keep doing what you're doing and fighting the good fight and try the best you can to enjoy that lunch.
I will. And by the way, Mike Lee and Rand Paul, they're already on top of this over there in the Senate. And I expect they're going to be leading the charge against this and the charge for liberty and freedom. So thanks for covering it, Clayton.
Absolutely. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us here on Redacted. We really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
I mean, just shocking information. Thank you, Congressman Massey, for joining us here on the show. I mean, he's literally saying that this isn't about China. There's no evidence whatsoever, even behind, even in classified briefings, when we asked them for evidence, they gave us zero evidence that China has been using it as a spy tool. And they managed to rush this thing through with lightning speed. The bill didn't even exist 1 week ago. Wake up, people. Pay attention here. So unbelievable.
I also think that when you look back at the war with Ukraine and you realize that at least since the Olympics in Russia, but probably before that, we've been warmed to think of Russia as an enemy through subtle mind-controlling ways. And then think about to yourself, has the same thing been done to me about China? What do I know about China for sure? What do I know for myself? What are the narratives that I can prove or not? And if I don't know these things for sure, why have I been primed to hate China? And what powers are they giving themselves because I buy this uncritically?
Right. So maybe China is terrible, right? His point, I think what he just made is maybe they are, right? Maybe they're nefarious. Okay. But why are you using that as cover for what you're really trying to do, right? Saddam Hussein is bad. 9/11 is bad. Here's your Patriot Act.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, so just wake up, look below the surface here, look, dig a little deeper, folks, on this, and don't just be fooled by their propaganda. And they're pushing it very, very hard. When a guy with an eye patch gets up in Congress and tells you to fear Congress, and Nancy Pelosi tells you to fear China, and when Nancy Pelosi tells you to fear China, yeah, you should pay attention. By the way, didn't she fly there on behalf of her investments in silicon chips? To go to Taiwan and visit Taiwan Semiconductor.
She did.
So just always look below the surface here, guys. You guys are smart. Thank you guys for being such a great audience here. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel. I don't ask you to do that all that often, by the way. Many of you watch our show and maybe you're not subscribed to the channel. So please do, whether it's on Rumble, whether it's here on YouTube or X, wherever you happen to be watching us, please subscribe. So we've got more news to get to here on your Thursday. We're going to look at this COVID inquiry in the United States, in the UK. And will there be another lockdown again? What will a new lockdown look like? And how quickly will it unfold? We're going to get to that in just a moment. We're also going to look at why Oprah is pushing this relationship with the biopharmaceutical complex for weight loss drugs. Callie Means is going to join us on that story. But first, right now, I mean, you don't need me to tell you. I mean, gold just hit an all-time high, continues to surge. I mean, over $2,100 an ounce. When we started this show, it was $1,900 an ounce. So this gold is surging right now. Precious minerals are surging. The U.S. dollar is a farce, and it is built on a house of cards that is about to collapse and come tumbling down as these small banks start collapsing. So our friends over at Lear Capital can help you get set up right now to start investing in precious minerals, precious metals like we do, which is gold and silver. They'll ship it right to your door. They'll even send you, if you want to order, like you want to order some silver. Here's one of my silver bars right here. This is 10 ounces of fine silver. You can have it shipped right to your house. You can store it in your gun safe, wherever you like, or you can have it stored off-site. But it's such an important part of our portfolio, and they're a patriotic company. They've been around for decades. They've got thousands of five-star reviews, and you can get a free $3,200 gold kit report right now. Just give them a call. Maybe you're still on the fence about whether or not you want to put a little bit of your savings away from U.S. dollars into precious metals. That's fine. Just call them and talk to them about it. They're an American company. They like to talk to our viewers. They love Redacted. They love talking to Redacted viewers. So just don't be shy about it. Write this 1-800 number down. And when you have a free moment, just get on the phone with them and talk to them about how this works. 1-800-613-3557. Or if you're a little phone skittish, I'm not. I love to talk to people on the phone. I think that's how you can really connect with people properly. You can also go to their website, though, if you want, learredacted.com, and you can download the free $3,200 gold report where they see that price of gold hitting. Bank of America says over $3,000 an ounce of gold. Maybe they're right. Maybe they're wrong. We don't know, but I don't really care, to be honest with you. I don't really look at gold as a way of like, wow, this is massive appreciation on an asset. I look at it as wealth preservation. protecting your dollars, converting it into something that's been around for 5,000 years. That's the way that I look at it. So anyway, call them 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com.
Well, England will lock down again if they fail to do a proper COVID inquiry, which is exactly what they're doing because the parliamentary COVID inquiry is total bollocks, as they say. Mm-hmm. Anytime I can use that, I'm going to, even though it doesn't sound nice coming out of my American accent. The COVID inquiry is costing taxpayers between £300 and £500 million. And it is a total waste of time because it is so biased. That is what more than 50 professors and academics in the UK are warning. They sent this open letter about the COVID inquiry, saying to the Baroness who is running it, saying that the inquiry must urgently address its apparent biases, assumptions, impartiality, and lack of evidence-based approach, the letter says. Because when you look at what they're up to, they don't give a crap at actually looking at why certain policies were done. Why did some companies make a ton of money on COVID tests? Why were certain decisions made? They don't care. This is a total dog and pony show where in the end they'll say, we didn't know any better. We did our best. That was a shame because they're purposefully looking like this, like that. That's basically what's going on with UK taxpayers, but let's look for ourselves. But before we do that, why would the government not do a good job of investigating the government? Any guesses?
Could it be that they don't want to see wrongdoing just like the 9/11 Commission or the Warren Report or, I mean, any list of government responsible inquiries that have to look shine a flashlight into a dark space of the government?
Yeah.
What are you going to find?
When I was in the fourth grade, we had to trade papers to grade our math quizzes. And I sat at this table and everyone said, hey, we're going to grade each other like that, you know, and it's been on my conscience ever since. That is sort of what is happening here.
See, you're like the government. You're as bad as the government.
You wouldn't want me doing that because I had to do that in college when it was in, I think, English 104. And we had to exchange papers with one of our classmates. And I read their paper and halfway through it, I looked up and I was just like, is this supposed to be a college level paper? Did you write this in middle school? And I was like, what the hell is this? And it was so bad. So yeah, you don't want me investigating the government.
Well,
I'll actually ask questions and find out. Well, they don't want me
not
to.
Pulling any punches.
In my defense, I was 9. It seems like you were a young adult at this, and caved to peer pressure. I was also the only girl at that table, and I felt like, you know. Anyway, this is exactly what the COVID inquiry is. If there is anybody there who is the well-intentioned Natalie at that table, they're not speaking up. They're doing exactly what 9-year-old Natalie did. So let's take a look at what these academics are accusing the COVID inquiry of. First of all, they're saying that it's biased. They're saying the inquiry originated in legal petitions brought by bereaved family groups. But they're not bothering to talk to these family groups. They're not really interviewing anybody who has suffered from the negative effects of the pandemic policy decisions. That's weird, right? They say they're basically ignoring people who've suffered negatively by the pandemic. School children, vaccine injured, people who were fired for vaccine mandates, people who died alone. Bueller, show up. Somebody. Also, they say that they're making false assumptions. They're taking for granted certain things that they knew even pre-pandemic, such as the fact that lockdowns could not stop pandemics, such as that they had weak evidence of effectivity and that they would cause harm to society. So even though there was research showing that lockdowns were not effective before the pandemic, they're pretending that they had to do it anyway. Now, this is when someone comes to you and you say, COVID was a farce. They didn't do a good job. And a lot of times people say they did their best. We didn't know any better. That's not true. I would love to feel like that was the case too. It's just not. This letter also accuses Parliament of only picking biased experts to talk to. For instance, they're saying they're only talking to people who have a vested interest in maintaining the justification for their policy recommendations. Yeah. Gotta find unbiased researchers. I can think of a dozen that you can talk to in the UK alone. And if they were to take a real look, what would they see? Well, here's what Richard Hughes, chairman of the Office for Budget Responsibility, warned about this week. He said that the UK is suffering from what they call worklessness. And that's become a worrying trend since the pandemic, and it is hurting their economy.
Well, imagine that.
Yeah.
Here's a shock. Stay home, don't work. The government will give you stimulus and money
right.
to stay home. And then they're shocked that people don't want to go back to work.
Right. Or let's not educate our upcoming workforce in young people. Oh, but now learn how to get yourself right back in there and contribute to the economy. It's not that easy, but clearly they don't want to see that. Instead, the scientists say that the COVID inquiry is not even trying to get to the bottom of COVID policies. They're saying that the format is impeding the investigation into key scientific policy questions just because of the legal format that prevents a systemic evaluation of the evidence by biomedical and social scientists on the harms of the restrictions of the British public, the impact of COVID from policies such as mandatory NPIs, and the state of evidence for best practice. Instead, it's just politicking. Like focused on, they say, on who did what or who said what, when should they have said that? That is stupid. And I mean, we do care very much, right? Why did they say this about pets? Why did they say this about masks? Yes, that matters. But on what basis were policies put into place? Not so much the politics, but the science, right? And why, what happens if we don't get these answers, if this remains to be a joke? Well, then they'll be able to continue to instate lockdowns the next time. They will say, see, we had no science back then. Next time we can make these decisions without any science. We'll just keep doing that. And most likely, again, the foregone conclusions will be when they finish this for 300 to 500 thousand pounds. No, what did I say? Millions. What did I say? Million. 300 to 500 million pounds. We didn't know any better. We did our best. Some mistakes were made. No one will be punished. No new policies will be put into place to prevent this.
No, but to me, the biggest rub of this is that, oh, we need to do it more quickly and faster next time. We need to make sure that we're moving.
Most likely, because now we see there was time between what we knew and what we didn't know. If we don't have to go on any information, which we don't, let's just do it.
Just immediately lock people down.
Yeah. Like
no evidence whatsoever. Immediate. That's right. What's coming.
Just have a lockdown lever installed.
Right.
I can't think of that. I can't think of the Prime Minister's house in
I was thinking
Downing
of like,
Street.
I was thinking
Downing
of like,
Street.
I was thinking Downing of Street. Like Matt Lauer's lever, like at the Today Show to close the doors when he would lock the women in. He would just go, funk.
I think it was a button, but okay.
A button. Yeah. Just be like a lockdown button. I like a lever.
Just anytime somebody sneezes, they just pull the lockdown lever and bam, it's on.
Yeah.
There you go. Don't you dare. Out of your house. Well, let us know what you think of this, if the UK is totally wasting taxpayer money. I don't think it's a hypothetical. I don't think anybody in our chat's going to say, no, it's doing a great job. But
yeah, let us know if you're
let me know
person.
If you want to make that case.
Let us know in the chat room if you're one of those people that thinks that. All right. We've got more news to get to here on your Thursday. We're going to look at Oprah and why in the world she's teaming up with Big Pharma and pushing Ozempic and these weight loss drugs on people. This is really stunning, but shouldn't surprise any of us. We're also going to look at Canada and a father who is asking for a court injunction right now in Canada so that the MAID program doesn't put his autistic daughter to death.
Oh, my God.
He has to go to a court, and it's been rejected. Two doctors signed off on this. Doctors pleading with the country, please don't put my daughter to death through the MAID program, the Medical Assistance in Dying program. This is Canada. Sounds like it's like Nazi Germany, but no, it's Canada.
And it may soon be France, because Macron has a plan in place to implement this program in France now. That was announced earlier this week.
But first, if you have any, as interest rates are about to go up instead of down, that's the big concern here. You know, the Trojan horse is that interest rates, the Fed may actually have to raise interest rates because things aren't good. The Fed may have to be doing this because they're in a real bind right now with inflation coming in hotter than expected. They may have to do the unthinkable, raise interest rates again. And March might be a pivotal month with major talk of an economic recession. However, we have to do some American economists, they have raised their forecast for the U.S. GDP. So in 2024, indicating the U.S. economy will continue to be strong. And in fact, a lot of economists saying right now that, and I just saw an interview with Ken Griffin, who said because they believe Trump is going to win. A lot of the positivity on Wall Street right now is baked into a Trump victory. So if you're seeing Wall Street surging right now, it's because Wall Street wants Trump to win and they believe he's going to. Isn't it crazy? But Biden can come out and be like, hey, look, our economy's strong. Really? So very, very interesting what's happening right now. Anyway, I've learned all of this, a lot of really great news, what's happening with NVIDIA, with this massive growth over 60% in the first 2 months of 2024, what's happening with the U.S. economy. I set alerts inside of my Moomoo app. I love it. It's my favorite trading app. You should download it right now. You get 15 free stocks when you sign up. Just go to redacted.inc/Moomoo. It's a Silicon Valley-based company. It's an online trading platform that I consider one of the best stock trading apps. Not only can you trade stocks, options, U.S. bonds, ETFs, but also one of the most cost-effective programs I know. No commissions, no hidden fees. Now Moomoo is operating in 7 countries, including U.S., Canada, Singapore, Australia. The best thing is U.S. residents right now will have a chance to get 15 free shares when they sign up, as well as the cash sweep account, which is 8.1% APY for a limited time. No minimum deposit. In addition to the Australian investors are also able to receive up to $6,600 in amazing benefits for Australia, including 10 free stocks and 6.8% APY. That's a high cash yield interest account. So think about it. That's amazing. You've got extra cash just sitting around. You want to, you know, get it out of your savings account. Put it here where you can get that 5.1% base rate plus an additional 3% right now for a limited time for the next 3 months. But you still get that 5.1 no matter what. And then that additional 3%. So all these powerful features, everything is free inside of your Moomoo app. Unlike other platforms that require a subscription fee, you can download it through our link right now. Get 15 free stocks for a limited time, 8.1% APY cash sweep. And if you're in Australia, get up to $6,600 in rewards and those 10 free stocks. Go to redacted.inc/Moomoo. Again, it's redacted.inc/Moomoo.
Why is ABC giving Oprah a chance to do an hour-long special, which is basically a commercial for Ozempic? Why is Big Pharma having access to your living rooms like this in an unfettered way? Callie Means joins me to discuss today. He's a health researcher and author, also a whistleblower for Big Pharma, Big Food, all of those things. He joins us today. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, pumped to be here.
So Ozempic is something you get to talk about a lot. Can you talk about why this maybe is or is not surprising that there'll be a whole hour-long special to talk about weight loss drugs?
Well, unfortunately, this isn't surprising at all. Let me just back up. And I really think Ozempic is one of the biggest issues in the country because this is on track to be the best-selling drug in American history. Novo Nordisk, the parent company, you know, based in Denmark, is now the most valuable company in Europe. It just surpassed Louis Vuitton, you know, an iconic European company. Now it's a drug company. What's interesting is that Ozempic isn't the standard of care for obesity in Europe. They're projecting the vast majority of their profits from the United States. And this company based in Denmark is one of the 10 largest funders of media ads, one of the largest funders of academic research in the United States now. Actually, one of the largest funders of civil rights groups. They actually have the NAACP and other civil rights groups literally lobbying for the approval of Ozempic and saying it's racist not to approve Ozempic. You know, they're funding the media. They're funding all of our institutions of trust here. And the reason this is important is because obviously we have a metabolic health crisis and an obesity crisis. 80% of American adults are overweight or obese. 50% of teens are overweight or obese. And what the argument is, you know, and what they're co-opting one by one, people we trust, is to move obesity from a, you know, personal accountability issue, from a food issue, from an exercise issue, from, you know, really addressing the root cause of why this has exploded in the past 40 years from our, you know, poisoned food system. And they're making it, saying it's genetic. Oprah's actually apologized after getting paid off, you know, at Weight Watchers and shifting Weight Watchers from a personal accountability group to an Ozempic prescriber. She's actually apologized for preaching personal accountability. And what this special represents is really the confluence of follow the money. You know, Ozempic, the parent company, is buying off the media. They're buying off the doctors who are going to be appearing on that program. You know, and they're buying off all of the other groups that influence society. And it's a real problem because it's shadowing and hiding the actual real problem, is that we're poisoning ourselves.
Right. And I think Oprah represents a good convergence of many things. She represents women. She represents a Black population. So what she's saying is, it's not our fault. We're just going to keep getting fatter and fatter. She actually says that the purpose of the documentary coming up is to release the shame, judgment, and stigma surrounding weight. So it doesn't seem like at all she wants anybody to lose weight anymore.
Yeah, it's actually just a totally schizophrenic argument, because it's in the one hand, it's promoting a drug that's expressly to lose weight. And on the other hand, it's about not shaming anybody. They're actually mixing up their arguments. I think what's so tragic about this is that the biggest social justice issue, the biggest inequality issue in the country, is when it comes to nutrition. You know, a lower income person in the United States dies more than 10 years younger than an upper income person. And that's not because of these fake social justice issues that we hear about on the news. That's almost demonstrably entirely because of nutrition. You know, lower income communities of color are actually absolutely getting decimated based on a rigged system that, you know, back when I worked for Coke, lobbies the food stamp program to basically only enable ultra processed food, to where 10% of food stamps go to Coca-Cola and sugary drinks, where 70% of food stamp SNAP funding goes to ultra processed food. We subsidize ultra processed food for lower income people. When you add up all the programs, $100 billion per year. This is not a free market. It's a totally rigged market against lower income people that's poisoning ourselves. The diabetes rate, 66% of Americans having prediabetes, 25% of Americans having fatty liver disease. These were unthinkable statistics. And instead of really calling that out, calling out the crony capitalism, calling out these companies, quite frankly, rigging our governmental institutions to prey upon poor people, particularly, Oprah is executing a cash grab. And I'll tell you, and I think we all know this, and all experience from chronic disease treatments show this, Ozempic is not going to reverse obesity. Ozempic actually, in the financial projections, shows that as it's prescribed, more obesity is going to go up, which follows the trend of other chronic disease treatments. You know, the more statins we prescribe, the more heart disease goes up. The more metformin we prescribe, the more diabetes goes up. SSRIs, antidepressants, the most prescribed drug in the country. 25% of women are now on antidepressants. The suicide rates and depression rates are skyrocketing. This is a moral hazard that's blinding us from the root causes of why communities of color, why lower income communities particularly, are getting so sick. And it's tragic, because then again, Oprah and these companies, and I helped do this, weaponize this kind of shame issue, this let's not body shame, let's not fat shame. Nobody is shaming an individual. I'm a personal responsibility guy, Natalie. And I got to say, when 80% of the country clearly, you know, is getting overweight or obese, I actually take that away from personal responsibility. There's a systemic issue driven by this devil's bargain between food and pharmaceutical companies. And it's not about the Oprah should be calling out the system, not propagating it.
Right. Have you read The Dorito Effect? That's a fantastic book about how our brains are hijacked when we eat these foods in a way that we almost cannot use personal responsibility. So it's systemic. I want to posit this, because the idea that it's racist to tell people that they should not be fat or overweight, I think, is in and of itself racism. If you look at, and follow me on this one, Social Security. So knowing that Black people, specifically Black men, are more likely to die early, so therefore less likely to take the Social Security that they pay into through their work, and white people live longer. If we're saying work, pay into Social Security, die early, and then us white people will just benefit from that because you won't be around to collect, letting them die early is systemic racism. Do you see what I'm saying?
100%. And I really had, this has been a journey for me. And I think, you know, viewers on the libertarian or conservative end of the aisle, I think we're reluctant to like meddle with the markets. And, you know, I used to argue for the food stamp companies. We don't, and even the pharma companies, we don't need any regulation. We don't need nanny states. What the invisible hand has done, and frankly, some evil people, is is rigged these incentives. And really our systems are benefiting a privileged few at the expense of the masses. And it's not because of a free market. It's because of a rigged system. You know, I something I've been preaching is let's not get into conspiracies. Let's just look at raw economic facts. You know, with the way Medicaid and Medicare and other entitlement programs go, where they're paying millions of dollars for a lower income person who gets sick, right? There's a huge incentive of the largest industry in the country, the healthcare industry, for lower income communities to get sick, because the government will be paying the bills for the corporations. You know, and there's an incentive for food companies to rig our food. You mentioned the Dorito effect. You know, this is something I've been pointing out. When the cigarette industry started declining in the 1980s, food companies became one of the largest employers of scientists in the world. All the scientists from the tobacco companies went to the processed food companies. And when I say weaponized, I really mean it. Due to the fact that they've rigged the government institutions, you know, there's nothing conservative, there's nothing libertarian, there's nothing free market about the fact that we have thousands of chemicals and neurotoxins and addictive substances in our food that aren't legal in other countries. That's a rigging of the market. So, you know, I think what's so evil and what you really point out, and I, again, helped propagate this early in my career, is that that system's rigged to big benefit an elite few, and then these social justice arguments are weaponized in order to shut people up. Then Coca-Cola and the pharma companies literally pay the NAACP to call anyone who criticizes them racist. They got to Oprah, and I don't know if she knows this or not. I assume she doesn't fully understand it, but they're using her as a tool, right? There's nothing that's more destructive to lower income communities and communities of color than this devil's bargain where we're poisoning our population and then profiting the healthcare industry. And through, I think, being blinded by the tens of millions of dollars Oprah's made from Weight Watchers, you know, and now pushing Ozempic, and there's a clear financial interest there.
They can prescribe it now. Weight Watchers can now prescribe Ozempic. Yeah.
What's that?
Weight Watchers can now prescribe Ozempic.
And oh, they've shifted their entire business model.
Yeah.
They shifted their entire business model. Yeah.
But I can't totally give her the benefit of the doubt that she doesn't know better, because there is now a mountain of litigation from people saying, I will have diarrhea for the rest of my life. I have permanent stomach paralysis. I was not properly warned. There's so many people having contraindications from this drug. We can't really say that she doesn't see that, can we?
It's a great point. I try to be charitable, but she's either being completely ignorant or there is real culpability here for Oprah. My point is twofold on Ozempic. Number one, even if the drug worked perfectly, this is not the public policy. You know, this is not the route to address our obesity epidemic. You know, I was at a playground recently with my two-year-old son, and almost every kid there is eating ultra-processed food, drinking soda. We're poisoning our population. And it's Orwellian to say, as Oprah and others are saying, as the special will shamefully say, that Ozempic should be an intervention for kids. You know, the American Academy of Pediatrics has recently said that it needs to be a frontline intervention for 12-year-olds. That's 50% of 12-year-olds. So we're literally having an assembly line where we're poisoning our kids. And then, you know, with the help of Oprah pushing this $15,000 a year per person treatment, when obviously we could be taking that money, you know, half that money, and fixing our food system. And just, I'm just being blunt, stop poisoning our population. So that's number one. It's the wrong public policy. Obviously, Oprah should be talking about, you know, getting to the root cause. Number two is the drug is a disaster, as you pointed out. It's actually being investigated in the EU for causing suicidal ideation. You know, we fail to realize our body is connected, and serotonin is produced in our gut. 95%, this hormone that regulates our contentment. Ozempic is gut dysfunction. So it's actually causing a sharp increase in depression, suicidal ideation, stomach paralysis, thyroid cancer. And actually 30% of people who are on the drug, even when it's paid for by insurance, have to go off of it within the first couple months because there's such pronounced side effects. So, you know, liquid anorexia, injectable anorexia, is really not the cause. It's not the cure for obesity. That's what this drug is. It's very problematic. The last thing I'll just say real quick is that the studies themselves are rigged. The FDA panel was stacked with folks that were paid for by Ozempic. And shockingly, the studies that led to approval didn't take into account muscle mass. And now it's coming out that this drug acts absolutely decimates muscle mass. The actual guidance is that if you take Ozempic, you need to work out 5 times a week. If people were working out 5 times a week, there wouldn't be this problem.
Yeah.
So the drug, I believe, will be recalled. And I do think anyone who's pushing this drug, anyone who's involved with this infomercial coming up with Oprah, we should hold them to account when that eventually happens.
Now, I heard you on the Honestly podcast, and you were taken to task because the doctors on that podcast said, yes, but heart disease is so much more dangerous than the drug. I'm going to let you respond to that. You can see how I feel about it.
Yeah, I debated a Harvard doctor who was paid for by Novo Nordisk, who's works for with Fatima Cody Stanford, who shamefully went on 60 Minutes and said obesity is genetic, and it's par for the course. She used credentialism, questioning that I wasn't a doctor like her, which I think is a strength because I don't have a financial interest for people to get sick. Mm-hmm. She scoffed at the idea that this could be linked to depression, which anyone who understands the science that I mentioned, the microbiome and serotonin, would understand. Only months later, the EU report comes out and there's serious investigations into that. And she made this argument that this is the miracle cure, right? That this is the panacea to address obesity, address heart disease, address these different things.
Right, in a way that made it seem like we can't do anything else about it. We've dug ourselves in and we can't fix heart disease. It's just, it's like almost like termites in the building.
This is the life's mission of myself and my sister, who is a physician in the system and left and is now an advocate. This is a spiritual crisis we're facing right now. The medical system, which is the largest and fastest growing industry in the country, is highly incentivized to have this cynical view of the American patient, that they just want to kill themselves, that they just want to be poisoning themselves. In this first week of Stanford Med School, my sister was told, by the dean of the school that the American patients are lazy, that they want to basically they're going to keep getting sick no matter what they do. The medical system is not here to make us better and healthier. They're here to clean up the mess, which makes them money. And that's propagated throughout the entire system. So what this Harvard doctor on Barry Weiss's podcast literally was saying is that the American people are so suicidal that they can't help themselves from trying to poison themselves. We should not be speaking about the fact that we're poisoning themselves and have literally trillions of dollars of incentives stacked against the American people. We shouldn't be changing those. We should be letting the American people poison themselves and then give them a weekly injection for the rest of their lives, which is just one in a series of chronic disease treatments that hasn't worked. I can't stress this enough. 90% of medical spending is on chronic disease treatment like Ozempic, things that you take forever. That has been an absolute disaster. Medical miracles were pre-World War II for acute issues that were going to kill you right away, surgical procedures, antibiotics, things like that. They've taken that trust, and now we have this litany of pills and treatments that we take for life. All that's happened is all those conditions have gone up. This is a lie. This is a game that's being played. The medical system is not good at treating the chronic conditions that are plaguing American life, heart disease, obesity, diabetes, depression, things like that. That happens outside the doctor's office. This is why Ozempic is so important, because in a moment where we're going bankrupt from healthcare costs, where 40% of high schoolers have a mental health disorder, where fatty liver disease, obesity, diabetes, even dementia we're seeing among teens, where everything is kind of going up all at once, autism, autoimmune conditions, these are all related. These are all related to core, factors, of metabolic health, food, exercise, sleep, et cetera. And we have a moment right now with 80% of the country overweight or obese. Are leaders like Oprah going to say, we need to assess what's going on? We need to assess what's happening to the human capital of this country, where life expectancy is declining well before COVID in the most sustained way since 1860, where we are becoming infertile and sperm count is down 80%, and PCOS, the leading cause of female infertility, is skyrocketing. We're having trouble procreating as a species. Are we going to get to the root cause and really figure this out, as RFK is talking about, as frankly President Trump is talking about more and more? or are we going to like fund the most widest drug in American history, where we literally tell 12-year-olds that obesity is an Ozempic deficiency and give them a shot for the rest of their lives? This is an existential moment, and Oprah should be absolutely ashamed of herself that she's funding and participating in this infomercial to give people exactly the wrong answer.
This is what Thomas Sasse warned about in the 60s, that we're becoming the therapeutic state, and it is the replacement. We have separation of church and state, but we have no more separation of pharmacology and state. So we're here. Thank you for ringing in on this. It's a pleasure to talk to you. You can follow Kelly Means on X. You always have great interviews that you do, and I appreciate you making time for Redacted.
Thank you, Allie.
Well, it was a pleasure to have Kelly Means on the show again. That was my first time talking to him. And follow him on X, because there's always some great things that he has to point out just about this sort of move towards getting us all to be unhealthy and addicted to pharmacy products. It's so crazy. And we have to continue to commit to personal responsibility when it comes to our health, because the government's not going to.
No, they want us eating processed food and give us medications to deal with the cancer and side effects of it all. So we've got more news to get to here on the show. We're going to speak with David Creighton here in a moment about this Canadian story, this MAID program, where a father is now having to try to seek a court injunction to try to get the country to stop putting his child to death, an autistic child. It's an unbelievable story, which we'll get to in just a moment. But first, we want to tell you about our newsletter. We've got a great newsletter, and you should sign up for it. We deliver it Monday through Thursday. It comes in your inbox first thing in the morning. We write it over coffee. Natalie and I commiserate over what stories we're going to cover that morning. And you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. It's short and sweet, but it's a great way to start your day. Again, we cover like 4 or 5 big stories. We give you some market news, updates, what's going on with gold, Bitcoin, etc. And it's a great way for us to stay connected with you as well. It's, you know, that way we're not on any of these big tech platforms. It's our own personal newsletter, so we can stay and email you directly. Anyway, sign up for it. It's totally free. Go to redacted.inc, put in your email address. You will receive a welcome email from us. And then you have to click confirm. You just have to do that. It might go to your spam folder or junk folder. Click confirm, and then you will receive the newsletter first thing on Monday morning, because we publish it Monday through Thursday. So you'll get it on Monday morning that you can kick off your day. So again, redacted.inc. Well, Canada's MAID law, the Medical Assistance in Dying Act, is kicked into high gear. It's one of the craziest laws in the world, and a lot of other World Economic Forum-based countries are following suit right now, but Canada's leading the charge on medically assisted suicide. And an unbelievable story came across our desk with a father asking the court in Canada to stop their 27-year-old daughter's MAID death. So he's asking the court to stop her death. The father doesn't want his daughter to die, yet she's been put on the list to be MAID-ed by Canada, wants a Calgary judge to continue its injunction, which prevents her from accessing MAID. That's what the father is asking for right now. He also wants a judicial review into the doctor's approval of his daughter for MAID. So what exactly is happening here? Let's ask David Creighton, who writes at the Post-Millennial, and he's a journalist in Canada who also has this great YouTube channel, Creighton's Right. David, you've been following the MAID story for a while here. So this Calgary father of a 27-year-old autistic girl has been put on the MAID list. How does that happen without the parents' approval, so that she's going to be marshaled off to death and he can't do anything to stop it?
Well, that's just one of the real burning questions here, Clayton. But I think what the father wants to know is a very simple question. How is my daughter eligible for MAID? How is my daughter eligible to be euthanized? Because according to the criteria, medical practitioners must determine through an assessment that the person has a grievous and an irremediable medical condition that causes intolerable and enduring physical or psychological suffering. Now, we can't name these people because there's a publication ban, but there's a father and a 27-year-old daughter, as you mentioned, Clayton. The father is saying, what is wrong with my daughter? He says he believes autism has affected his daughter, and I can't comment on how much or how little that is part of this because we don't know. But the father is saying, what medical condition does she have that is so irremedial that she's being offered MAID? And nobody is going to tell him. And that is what is so disturbing about this. Not only can a father not reach out and try to save the life of his daughter, but the doctors involved in this, and there has to be two doctors who give the okay to go ahead with MAID. Neither of these doctors are willing to say what the issue is here. Why is she eligible for MAID? Now, we just heard from Mark Holland, the Minister of Health in Canada, that MAID for the mentally ill was going to be put off until 2027. Looks like it's a done deal for 2027, but because of the massive pushback there's been from people like you and I about this issue, the federal government has decided to put it on the back burner for 3 years. So if medical issues are not involved here, and if they are involved here, that doesn't make her eligible for MAID.
Right.
So why is she eligible for MAID? And I think the father has the right to at least know why his daughter is being classified as eligible for MAID, because as far as he's concerned, she doesn't meet the criteria.
Well, it's unbelievable to me that a government would be able to decide to euthanize someone's child. I mean, and you can't do anything about it? That it somehow fits some level of, I don't know what the criteria is. Again, if she has autism or what puts her on some sort of a list that the government, the Canadian government, has the right to put someone's child to death without him being able to say, no, you can't do that. The fact that he even has to go through a court is, I mean, it's mind-blowing to me. This sounds like something that I would have read in a science fiction novel.
And that's exactly how it sounds. And you know, this isn't the first time we have come up against this intractable MAID system that just seems to want to offer this as a solution.
Right.
You recall we did a story a couple of months back about the Victoria woman who had supposedly incurable cancer. And instead of getting her an operation in Canada, the health authority said, why have you considered MAID? You know, that's right. An easy way out because you're going to die anyway. It turns out that she didn't die because, as we reported, she went to the States, Ohio, I believe was the state she went to get an operation. And she's now living free of cancer. So it turns out she didn't need MAID either because her condition was not irremediable. She was able to get treatment for it. So why are these doctors wielding this kind of power to the point where parents can't even know why their children are going to be euthanized in this process? This is very disturbing. And it also, the question comes to mind, why is Alberta not fighting back about this? Because as any Canadian knows, in Canada, healthcare is a provincial concern. It's under the jurisdiction of the provincial government, heavily funded by the federal government, but in the end, it's a provincial concern. So why is Premier Danielle Smith, who certainly put her foot right in the gender ideology issue and said, hey, in Alberta, we're not going to go with the dictates or the suggestions of the Trudeau government. We're not going to authorize sex changes for 12-year-olds. Why is she not saying, well, I think the doctor should at least tell the parent here what's going on. And I don't understand why this healthcare system in Alberta, which is representing a province that is the most conservative, small c conservative in Canada. And is certainly, I think if you took a poll of Albertans, you would get a remarkable number of Albertans who are opposed to euthanasia, who are opposed to medical assistance in dying. So why is this province not fighting back? Just like it did not fight back when Annette Lewis, a Canadian woman from Alberta, was denied a transplant, a life-saving transplant, because she refused to get the COVID vaccine. Once again, Alberta did nothing. Alberta healthcare did nothing about that. I think that's shocking.
No, it's very interesting because we've been holding up Alberta as like a bastion of hope for Canada right now, right? And so it's very odd. I want to ask you about the doctors, though, the piece of this that I find curious. You brought it up, why the doctors signed off on this, of this girl being put on the MAID program. The doctors had to sign off on this, two of them. Are they getting some kind of a kickback from the federal government, or is there some kind of a threat being hung over their head if they don't sign off on this?
I certainly wouldn't want to comment on whether they're getting kickbacks, but do I see collusion here between doctors, between the medical system and the Trudeau government? Yes, I do. I see definite collusion, and I see a reluctance on the part of so many doctors to say, hey, have you considered living,
right.
dying? Have you considered what you might need to do to make life manageable? Is suicide the only option for you? Instead, in far too many cases, we see doctors saying, hey, have you considered suicide? And there's another example I can give you right now, and it's probably something I should be following up with more vigorously, but there's a number of class action suits going on right now against the COVID vaccine. One of them is a woman named Kayla Pollack, who says she was paralyzed by the COVID vaccine. Now, whether or not she goes any further with that class action case and whether it's successful or not, guess what she was offered by the Canadian healthcare system in lieu of...
Let me guess.
Being treated.
Suicide.
Made. Yeah. Yes.
Not some,
you're paralyzed.
Not help, not yeah, some sort of money or financial help or assistance, or maybe retrofitting your house now because we've paralyzed you. We're just going to offer you a simple way out, which is just the MAID program. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know, I tell you, Clayton, Trudeau's Canada is becoming a nightmare state. And every day when I wake up and I look around, I read the headlines and I survey the news and I write the news or I do a broadcast or I appear in your show, I'm saying we're looking more and more like Nazi Germany every day. And that used to be hyperbole to say that. It used to be a horrible exaggeration, and I would never have stooped to that. But it is getting that bad, not only with this MAID that is, even though it hasn't been officially extended, it seems to be open for anybody now who really wants it. Go ahead, we'll sign off on it. And of course, you know, with the Online Harms Act, we're into a position of thought crime and locking people up for what they think.
Yeah,
what
life
they
and
say.
Life imprisonment, yeah. Right? Life imprisonment is what the Trudeau government wants to do. I mean,
exactly. And what scares me though about this, Clayton, is that if doctors can do this without any kind of legal restraint from the parents, how far is this system going to go, even though the federal government is not extending it in terms of mental health? Is it already there? Is it already doing this? How little do we know about this MAID system and about how far it's already progressed?
Right.
Because when I see this, I'm saying, you know, maybe the federal government hasn't officially sanctioned mental health as a criteria, but is that how, in effect, it's operating? That's a question I think we need to answer, because this story is not just pertinent to the issue. It's very important to understand what's going on here behind the scenes. This is a nefarious, odious system. Euthanasia is like a cancer. And unfortunately, that's what they're recommending for real cancer. Is if you're sick at all, maybe MAID's your solution.
Yeah. I can't believe I'd be saying this, but cancer is actually better. Cancer is actually better than MAID right now. And it's not necessarily a death sentence, as one of your examples was, flying to Ohio, not having to take part in the MAID program. Oh, man. Well, hopefully this father is able to get this court to take action on this, because this is just appalling. David Creighton, great to see you. Thanks for staying on top of this story.
Thank you so much, Clayton.
All right, our thanks to David for joining us. We really appreciate it. And our thanks to all of you for joining us this week. We really appreciate it. And like I said earlier, I noticed that in our analytics, many of you watch the show, but you're not subscribed to the show, which is very odd. So please, here's what happens. I know that YouTube does this. They unsubscribe you once a month or so. We have viewers that write to us. They're like, I subscribed to your channel, and then YouTube unsubscribed me. Okay, well, maybe you could resubscribe if you'd like to. Also, it's free, or you can come over to Rumble, and you can do that as well. You could subscribe there. Hopefully, they don't unsubscribe you. Or on X, wherever you'd like to be a part of our show. We really appreciate it.
Also, I'm going to take this opportunity to do a little I told you so, because we also noticed that a lot of you did watch the piece about Princess Kate yesterday, despite all the belly aching, saying we don't want to talk about the royal family. Yes, you do, you liars. You're watching it, so I just wanted to say
Yeah. I'm gonna send you a picture I took yesterday after the show. You'll appreciate it. It's
an inside joke.
Complaining about...
Oh, somebody did complain about it.
Yeah, okay. The comment was, thank you, redacted, except for the Princess Kate story.
I love the back and forth about it and that we don't care about this, but we kind of do. What's also funny is how many disproportionately women care about it and men are like, what's going on here? So I'm glad to be the one to sort of introduce it to you.
No, I did say, look, once we started going, I'm like, okay, wait a minute, there's a murder in possibly here. There's why haven't we seen her in 80 days? Like, all right, now I'm interested in the story. Now it's not just like a Photoshop thing. It's like there's a mystery afoot. And that interests me. Like, what is the royal family hiding? Okay, now I'm interested in the story. Something fishy is going on.
All right. I mean, sometimes we do thought experiments and that was, we'll see, right?
But there were a bunch of people last night live during the show. They're like, oh, no, I don't want to hear about the royal
family. And yet we could see in the analytics, the audience was steadily going up.
People
so
are like,
you liars, you're liars.
They just had to wait till nobody else was around and they could hide
like,
in the closet
and watch
it.
Right. They're like, I'm gonna say
oh,
in the chat.
I don't care about this.
I'm gonna say in the chat room, what is this garbage? But I wanna go watch it. So, anyway,
when I checked the channel after only an hour, it had 20,000 views. I was like, oh, wow, it's popping off.
Yeah,
people are interested in it.
All right, I mean, I'm surrounded by so many guys on this show. You know, everyone who works on this show is a male. So sometimes you gotta give me a little female energy here.
All right, I'll give you some female energy.
Thank you for that. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a great week.
Get some female energy.